Hello, I'm Paddy O'Donoghue, and welcome to Season 1, Episode 9 of the In The Bin Rugby Pod, brought to you by LastWordOnRugby.com. The Champions Cup continued into its second week and delivered one of the finest weekends of rugby this year. Exeter travelled to Montpellier, fully armoured and dangerous, and woke up before Nadolo to snatch a magnificent win on the go-go. Once again, Leinster underlined their European credentials as Healy scored freely, and Sexton marshalled the Irish province to a crucial away win. Elsewhere, Tigers roared to maximum points, and despite not rassing out of the traps, Munster secured a vital victory at Toman Park. We'll also discuss events down under, where the Wallabies end the Bledis low on a high, as Folau inspires them to a long overdue win against New Zealand. And I am joined as ever by my co-host, shorter and less bearded than me, but a lovely man, Andy Wemble.
Oh, thanks for those very kind words. That is one of the best introductions I've ever heard, and I'm going to struggle to beat that next week. You have raised the bar.
Yeah, I must say, when I was coming up with the woke up before Nadolo, I didn't know if it was genius or just absolutely awful. But I thought it was so bad, it might actually turn out to be quite good. So I went with it.
I'm going with genius. It was absolute genius.
So how are you, mate? Good weekend?
Yeah, well, lazy weekend, really. Didn't have much on. So I spent most of my weekend on the sofa watching the rugby. And annoyingly, after that lovely introduction, the only game that I didn't actually watch live that was on the telly was the Montpellier Exeter game, because I was out, surprisingly enough, at a library, being all cultural and that. But yeah, so
that does not sound like you at all.
Well, you know, I aim to sort of bring myself up these days. But yeah, no, I had a great weekend of rugby watching, so I'm well ready to go for the pod.
Yeah, well, I know you've had a little bit more free time than me recently to get stuck into the games. Yeah. Been off at yet another wedding, so my first wedding, which is a run of three in the next 5 weeks. So I'll be probably interrupting a ceremony any weekend soon with watching rugby on my phone when I just get sick of it.
I've done that and I got in a lot of trouble.
Well, you know, men don't really learn from their mistakes, so why would I listen to you and then not do it?
And you've got to get used out your wedding suit.
Absolutely. Well, I seem to be expanding my wedding suit repertoire at the moment. Oh, so, God, yeah. People just need to stop getting married, Andy.
I'm sorry. It's not like anyone's decided to get married on the day when England play New Zealand. That'd be a stupid decision to make.
That would be really stupid, wouldn't it, Andy? Right. So, yeah, as mentioned in the introduction, it was just a blistering weekend. I mean, we've been treated to some pretty good rugby since the start of this season, but this past weekend was particularly good, wasn't it? Some really thrilling games going on.
Oh, well, it raised the bar, yeah, like sentence, thrilling games, but also try of the week has never been more difficult to pick. There were some absolutely wonderful tries for varying reasons all over the place, and teams who you thought were gone have come back a bit. There was nearly an absolute shock in over in Italy. Tight games. Oh, it was, yeah, fantastic to watch, and all played out to in a pretty decent spirit as well. Not too much niggle this week either.
No, so I do like a bit of niggle, but mostly it was all right, wasn't it? I know Hartley was seemed to be winding people up again, and Marla was up to his usual tricks, but on the whole, pretty decent. But I think one of the first things that we wanted to talk about was, despite the level of rugby being very high so far, and some teams have been probably performing over expectations, now we're into that, well, we're through that second week of Champions Cup. It's when you start to get a real look at how the tables are lying. And a lot of teams, actually, it's very unlikely that you can bounce back to qualify after opening defeats in both of your first two games. But it is starting to already have a familiar feel about it, with basically both Welsh teams, the Scottish team in Glasgow and Treviso, with two losses from two. And we're already looking at Irish provinces, French teams and Premiership teams looking to qualify. And I think we may be hoping for a little bit more this year.
I think it's tricky. And the one that I would put out of that and put aside is Benetton, who I think have played massively above their expectations. And I think have performed exceptionally well. And it's going to be interesting to see how they get on in their doubleheader with the Scarlets, who know them a little bit better. Obviously, Bath don't play them that often, perhaps haven't seen their improvement. And they were a bit of a surprise. But what they did against Toulon this week was absolutely fantastic. So I'm going to leave them to the side in terms of not necessarily, I think they've overperformed despite the fact they've got two losses. But yeah, Glasgow and Scarlets are the ones that I'm, I think disappointed is the right word, because with the start of the season there, I think Glasgow have won all six. Scarlets have won 5 out of 6, and they were playing really nice rugby. And I thought, right, they've got to go on now. And especially because Leinster and Munster hadn't particularly played the best rugby at the start of the year. Glasgow put a pasting on Munster earlier on in the year. Leinster have lost a game as well. Oh, I think a couple of games. And you think, oh, you know, is there a sea change in the Celtic rugby? And then you get to the European games and the Irish Promises do what they do. They up the game. They turn in the big performances. They know what they're doing. And it's not gone right for Scarlets or Glasgow, who I don't know if it's their games aren't built for the Champions Cup. They both play fast, wide rugby, very exciting, very entertaining. But when it comes to the grind of the Champions Cup, perhaps they don't have the ability to keep it tight, muscle up, and play a sort of grittier game that might benefit them in the long run.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. With the style of play, it's maybe not best suited to some of the teams and the games they're going to come up against in the Champions Cup. But I do still find myself disappointed, particularly, same as you, with Glasgow and Scarlets. So Scarlets were devastating at the end of last season and then ended up winning the Pro 14, and Glasgow have been the same at the start of this season. I think it's probably a little bit tough, particularly on Glasgow, just because of the group they got. They could have had so many, not necessarily easy groups, but groups that just weren't such a nightmare. Being grouped together with Leinster, Exeter and Montpellier, it is horrible. And they just need a little bit of the rub of the green, I think, as well. Because they have come up against teams in the Pro 14 that do play a tougher game. I know, you know, Munster are a classic example. And when they went to Scotland to play them, they got absolutely torn to shreds. And I think I was really expecting Glasgow to do that at home against some of the sides. And it is a little bit upsetting. You know, I think that it's not anything to get overly concerned about at the moment, because we've said there are a lot of other factors going into it. And Benetton, I think that they are well worth flagging that despite losing both their games, the improvement they've made is enormous. And I did not see it coming. I think it was only in the preview of this season that we were talking about them. And we were pretty dismissive because we were just expecting the same old dross. And I just almost can't fathom quite how much they've changed.
Yeah, and they're playing a nice brand of rugby again. I think Conor O'Shea has been involved, as we were saying last week, and I think he's had a bit of input in Zebra as well, who didn't do too badly in the Challenge Cup either. And they've got that eye. Is it Ian McKinley, the Irish guy who wears the glasses?
Who's
coming and is doing really well and has now got a call up into the Italy side. And as well as being able to sort of do this, the usual what people imagine of the Italian things, your scrum work, good maul work, brave tackling and forward play, they actually are putting in some lovely tries. They play nice wide rugby at times, and I think they're starting to go a similar way to how sort of the Scarlets and Glasgow play at times, and learning that actually, if you try and expand the game a little bit, you don't have to be, you know, Sevens Fiji style, but you can expand your game, you can play a bit better, a bit wider, and it actually is going to bring you some success and actually get these sort of exciting, fast players in. And you think with the Italian sort of way, you know, they're sort of quite overt, sort of out there people. They'd like to express themselves and perhaps a bit more flair. And they were, I say, exceptionally unlucky with the fact that it was howling rain in Italy, and they dropped the restart in the 80th minute, which gave Toulon a scrum, and the rest, as they say, is history. In terms of, I think you're saying about Glasgow, I would say, tough group, and they came up against a Leinster team who did to them what Chiefs did a bit, which was just use forward power in the end, and they sort of bullied them off the pitch. I felt more sorry for the Scarlets because, I mean, at one point I was watching that game on Friday night, and I turned my laptop to show the missus. I was like, you can't even see the players. They were doing a close-up, and the rain was so thick. It was sheeting down, and you couldn't even tell who was on the screen, hardly. And having put in a really good performance in the sunshine in Toulon only 5 days before, playing the style they like, I think it was unlucky that they ended up having to play in what was just a monsoon in West Wales, and they perhaps could have got something out of that. Other than that, like you say, in terms of the teams doing well, I didn't back Munster coming into the tournament. I think they didn't look very good in the, they looked okay in the Pro 14, but not the sort of dominant side that they had been last season. And they're right up there with Leicester at the top of that group, again, in a very tight pool. And Leinster seem to have pulled it out of nowhere. These performances, I think, were a shock to everybody in the Irish public, as far as I could tell. Leinster had sort of dawdled their way through the first few games.
Yeah, they hadn't really been particularly inspirational, but I think Leinster are one of those teams where I didn't really have much doubt that when it was required, they would be able to turn it on. You just look at the quality throughout their entire squad. I was just waiting for it to happen. And I think that's one of the things that the Irish provinces, particularly Leinster and Munster, are really good at, because Munster aren't the team they used to be, but they still have this nous and ability to manage a game and grind out a result and do the right things at the right times. And Leinster, as much as they're known a bit more for their expansive game, their forward pack these days is phenomenal. And that was in full display at the weekend. And when you see them perform like that, you've got to see them as contenders, because they've got danger throughout their back line and a forward pack that can mix it up with the best of them. And not many teams are that lucky to have it on both sides of the ball. So I think their Leinster are pretty well set up. Should we delve into the pools and go into the games a bit more now then?
Oh, why not?
Let's make sense to start, I think, in Pool 3. And we can talk a little bit more about the Montpellier-Exeter game, which ended up 24 Montpellier, 27 Exeter. So just an unbelievably good win for Exeter, and just a losing bonus point for Montpellier.
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking forward to seeing the Chiefs in Europe this year, because I think they were targeting it. They've had a couple of seasons. I think the two seasons ago they made the quarterfinals. Just they got out of a group with 16 points somehow, because Clermont forgot to kick a penalty. And now I think they're going, you know, all out for this. And it shows, and they've put in a good performance against Glasgow, and an even better performance here. Henry Slade was phenomenal. And if he doesn't start at 13 for England, I'd be very, very surprised. He ran the show beautifully with Gareth Steenson. But it's the power of their pack, because everyone expected Montpellier to just go for power, and Exeter were going to have to sort of change their game. Everyone knows Exeter like to get to within a few metres, and then they go pick and go, pick and go, pick and go. And they do it so well that eventually they score. And, oh, they're not against Montpellier. Montpellier have got big forwards. Two pick and go tries for them. Absolutely fantastic. Don Armand, I don't know what more he's got to do to really be really pushing Eddie Jones' thoughts for an England place as well. But just the style of the game and the way it was played, it was hard, it was fast, it was a good rugby game that was very entertaining for everybody. And when you've got people like Nadolo on the field as well, you're always going to get magical moments of that just defy belief as well. So all round, it was an excellent game to watch, and fantastic for Exeter to get the win.
Yeah, it was just a huge win, and I am delighted for Exeter. I know, again, it's something we discussed in our season preview, that we both had a feeling that this was the season they were going to go for Europe. Now they were really settled domestically, and there's not really many better ways to put like an emphatic point on that statement by winning away in France against a huge Montpellier side. And as you say, I think standout players, definitely Armand and Slade. Armand has to be pushing for England contention now. There was a bit of criticism that he wasn't strong enough in the ball carry, but then he's, even in this game, he scored two tries, which showed incredible strength. And I think that's always what you look for in a player, that when, even if they are playing exceptionally well, if they've got faults or areas of improvement pointed out to them, that you can then visibly see that improvement or them working on that area of the game. And he seems to be doing all of that, and I'm sure it won't go unnoticed. But I do just think it was almost the antithesis of a French away performance. I just think if the shoe had been on the other foot, particularly with the lead kind of going back and forth a little bit, Montpellier edging ahead and Exeter clawing them back, I couldn't help but think that if that was a game in England or in Ireland or Wales, and the French side kept on letting that lead slip, they would just give up, and they'd have had enough, and they would have lost maybe by 20 points. But Exeter just refused to let go, and they were just in there the whole time. And it was just a very typical Exeter Chiefs performance, but one that it's brilliant to see them doing in Europe.
I agree. I mean, the only thing I would slightly you can't criticise Exeter because they've had the tough game away at Montpellier that I don't think Leinster have had yet. But they haven't got any bonus points. They didn't get bonus points at home to Glasgow, and they didn't get one away here in terms of tries. Whereas Leinster, wily old European Foxes, have got both, and they're now 2 points clear. And actually, Montpellier have managed to pick up 2 bonus points in that game, and they're sitting on 3 points. So all it takes is for Exeter to slip up at Leinster, perhaps. It could happen, you know, at home to Leinster, lose both those games. Montpellier do the double over Glasgow, and all of a sudden, those bonus points are so crucial that Montpellier are only 5 points back on Exeter, which is one win. And as much as they've managed to win in France, it's just that nagging doubt in your mind that goes, oh, they're just there. They might be able to get them, especially when you've got Leinster in a double header at Christmas.
I just wonder, though, if I know it seems like a silly thing to say now, but last week talking about this could be the first time every team in a group has 3 wins at the end of the group. But now it almost looks as if there could actually be 2 teams that come out of this group, which seemed pretty inconceivable when you saw the teams in it. But looking at just how impressive Leinster and Exeter have both been, if they share their games against each other, I don't think it's out of the question that you could actually see them both come out of it.
No, I think that all depends on how Glasgow do against Montpellier. If Glasgow man up, for want of a better way of putting it, and stop Montpellier getting a win in Scotland, then Montpellier might well lose interest. However, if Glasgow can't and Montpellier come out of, say, they get a bonus point win at home and a win in Glasgow, that's 9 points. Exeter and Leinster share their games 4 each. All of a sudden, Montpellier are now close by and they go to Sandy Park thinking, we can get this, and they're the sort of side that are built that they can do that. Big, you know, horrible pick-em-alls there, Pienaar to run the show. And it just, I think if Glasgow can take something off Montpellier, then yeah, you could get 2 teams out of it. The French will lose interest and Exeter and Leinster might run the table. But if they've got something to play for, just that little something in their minds, it could well change.
Yeah, I think Sexton staying fit will also be crucial for Leinster, because as impressive as they were without him when they got the bonus point win against Montpellier, I'm not convinced they would have had a bonus point win away at Glasgow without him. Just the control he has and the influence he has over a game, and obviously the wraparound try that is just seeming to happen all the time. Still, people are not picking it up. That just seems like it's a given, isn't it? Every game, Sexton wraparound try at the moment. But he is prone to a few injuries and a few knocks. So there's definitely a few variables that can change the outlook of this group quite quickly. So it is still interesting, but I just think it wasn't even a thought that there could potentially be 2 teams coming out of this group before, and it is a possibility now.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I did see a journalist had tweeted the Johnny Sexton wraparound, you know it's coming, what are you going to do? And Brian O'Driscoll tweeted, there's nothing you can do if the running lines are good. Why reinvent the wheel? And I think that's it. We look at it and think people must know it's coming, but I imagine when you're on the pitch, it's just so much different seeing all of the moving parts. And although you know it's going to Sexton, you still got to take your other man. Because if you don't, and that guy goes through, you look a right numpty.
Yeah, and I suppose, again, it is, you've got to give Sexton some credit, because a lot of it is timing and deciding when to give it a go and when not to. And when I was watching the highlights of this game and I saw the try, when he decided to do it, the Glasgow defence had got themselves, the two defenders had got themselves really bunched up and flat-footed next to him. And he just knew that if he gave it and ran around, there was then going to be a big gap. And I think he must have seen that and thought, this is the time to do it and go for it. And he's just one of those players that sees things as they're happening, is able to act on it incredibly quickly and then execute it as well.
Indeed. I did, in that game, the only thing I'd mention on that game is I felt quite sorry for Glasgow, because by the end of the half, they'd lost their captain to a head injury. Then halfway through the second half, they lost the rest of their back row to head injuries. They sort of two players managed to knock each other out, their inside centre and their back row making a tackle. They both put their heads on the right side for them, but as they put their heads on the right side, they went round the back and smashed each other's heads, split each other open. And so I think injuries did cost them a little bit in the back row, which would have helped them deal with Leinster's powerful forwards. And just one more note, it was nice to see Hogg back, some absolutely beautiful breaks, and he took his try really well, which only bodes well hopefully for them going forward in the Pro 14 and also for Scotland in the Autumn Internationals.
Yeah, it was good to see him back. But did you not think as soon as you saw him, my God, why haven't you got a haircut? See the state of his barnet.
I thought it was, he'd gone sort of mid-90s emo. I thought perhaps he's having sort of some sort of personal crisis and it's a sort of cry for help.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, God, he's taken this latest injury harder than I thought and he's not looking after himself. Let's send that man to a barber's. And also another thing I just reminded me, when you're talking about the two Glasgow players knocking themselves out, they've got form for that as well. Because I can't remember how long ago it was, but they scored a try and two of their players went to, you know, everyone's just, when someone scores and the try scorer gets mobbed and everyone starts jumping on top of them. They had two players that ran from opposite sides, went to jump on top of it, and they just met with a perfect stag-rotting headbutt in the middle of it, completely cut themselves wide open, and we're almost knocked out. So I don't know what it is with Glasgow players doing that, but I think they need to be a bit more careful. Right, mate, let's move on to Pool 4. So we've got Munster with a 14-7 win at home to Racing, who pick up a losing bonus point. And then Leicester will start there because they just completely demolished Castra, didn't they? 54-29, try bonus for both in the end, which is a bit of a result considering how Castra started the game. But it was just total domination, wasn't it? You know, Castra don't really ever turn up away from home. I think it's a long, long time since they've won away in Europe. But even still, Tigers looked hugely impressive. And I think a massive feature for me was their offloading game.
Yeah, I think it's what Matt O'Connor's been trying to do to them all season. He wants them to play a bit wider, go away from that grunty pack game that was the late 90s, early 2000s Leicester, and try and expand a little bit. And it's getting there. When you've got, as we said, I think I said many times, when you've got Youngs, Ford and Tamura at 9, 10, 12, you've got the ability to play wide. You just need to get the forwards buying into it, getting the running lines, getting the offloading going. And they did it. And I think it's the performance they've been waiting to put in. They hadn't had a try bonus point all season so far. And then they run in about 6 or 7 in this game. It was unbelievable. Breaking from the back, they scored 3 tries that started inside their own 22, where they saw it was on and they went. Not the conservative kicking, playing what's in front of you, which is excellent. Tamura, I think he ran the show for the first half, and then he went off injured, and they brought on Ford's younger brother, and they didn't actually seem to miss a beat, which was very impressive. But the standout for me, other than Johnny May, who apparently has been nicknamed Johnny Vardy around Leicester now, because he scores every week, apparently, it was Ellis Genge. Ellis Genge was unbelievable. It was like a bowling ball. Just bouncing people off, just power, pace, and I hope he's in. He limped off, and they took off Cole and Youngs, and for some reason didn't take him off on about 55, 60 minutes, and then he tweaked his ankle, I think. So hopefully he's okay, because if you've got him in the England squad with Mako, I think you're looking very, very good on the tight head. There's so much it could go on. Malouf looked all right, looked very good. Vianu stepped people out. I mean, he made people break their ankles stepping them. You just hope that they haven't put in too much into one performance and they've left a little bit something for the weeks to come, because it really was such a very good performance.
It was, and I think the reason Genge wasn't taken off is because the coaches were having as much fun as everyone else watching him, because the baby rhino was at his best. And it's the thing, he doesn't actually look that huge. Like he does look like a player who has serious power in him, but when you compare him to other players on the pitch, he doesn't strike you immediately as someone who's going to be that destructive. But the way people do bounce off him, and I think a lot of it is his attitude, because anytime he has the ball and he's running into people, he almost death stares them. It's like he's looking for blood and murder as he runs into people. And it's almost a bit psychotic. But when it's a player on a rugby pitch, I have to say I quite enjoy seeing somebody that's fired up and just relentless at running into people. I was getting a bit caught between the overall performance of these two teams, of how much of it was Leicester being good, how much of it was Castro travelling badly and not turning up. And as always, I think with a result like this, it's definitely a bit of both. And there will be huge concern about Tamura going off and Genge. I think I heard earlier that they don't expect Genge's to be too serious, which is good news, because I want to see him again soon. But Vianu was his slippery, tricky best. He's a player that just is able to step at so much speed. that people are just looking round, and he's already gone past them, and they're just not really sure what direction he's gone in. But there were some really standout performances. But yeah, it was very, very good from Leicester this week. Not often I give him that much credit, is it, Andy?
No, you're not a big Tigers fan. I think the other thing is, I mean, Castro only made 70% of their tackles, which is shocking. And after 52 minutes, they'd only made 61% of their tackles, which is truly, truly awful. The only other point on Leicester is there's definitely room for improvement because their line-out was poor again. I've never been Tom Young's biggest fan, as you know. I know he brings a lot to the pitch in terms of his carrying and obviously his leadership, but I really wish they'd get just a competent throwing in hooker. Old school. You know, I know you want Jamie George. Obviously, they can't get Jamie George and he's the top, top level, but just a good, solid hooker who's going to hit his darts, hook the ball, and then let all the other players do their stuff, because they really, I can just see at some point this season that line out letting them down in a big spot.
It's like the rugby equivalent of the Adam Gilchrist effect in cricket, when you get a wicketkeeper that's so good at batting that everyone tries to get a batsman in, when actually they're giving away runs left, right and centre by not keeping wicket. And I think you've seen the evolution of hookers over the last decade, particularly into these huge ball carriers that are great in the loose. And then people forget that actually you need your hooker to scrummage well. You need him to throw in from the line out straight and hit his jumpers. And then anything on top of that is going to be a bonus. But if you can't do those basics, then that's not good enough when you get to an elite level of rugby.
And especially now that they're actually making hookers hook for the ball. This has been my favourite thing. One of my favourite things to watch over the 2 weeks in Europe is referees actually making hookers hook the ball. And when they're not, giving away free kicks. Brilliant. No more. Well, brilliant.
Enjoy it while it lasts, because this was supposed to happen about 2 years ago and it did for about a month. And then by next season, there was just feeding left, right and centre again. There was no hooking needed. So I'm not going to get excited until I see this enforced consistently over a good period of time.
I agree. And I think giving Castro that try bonus point just gives them a little, again, a bit like Montpellier, a little sniff that they might be able to do something. It's quite cunning of Leicester just to keep them in the game so they play hard against Racing. Very, very, very sneaky.
One thing I did forget to say is that I know Castro don't turn up away from home, as we said, but they made 9 changes for this game. And that just suggests, well, we know we're going to lose, so why bother? Let's try and save some players. And I just think that attitude stinks a bit when you're playing in the European Cup. Well, I expect in the European Cup, people to put out their best sides every week, unless they've done that already and there is no possibility of them doing anything. Then you can understand them wanting to hold people back if they've got other priorities in the league. But to make 9 changes in the second week just because you're away from home, I thought that was pretty poor.
Everything you said, I couldn't agree more.
Right, let's have a look at the Munster game then. So this is a game which, on the face of it, looked like it could have been quite dull. It was 0-0 after an hour, although it was not a bad game from what I've seen. And then there was a charge down try for Murray to nick Munster in front. That looked like that was probably going to be pretty key at that stage. Whoever got the first score, they got another try fairly quickly. And then Racing managed to get one back, and then we're piling on the pressure before Munster managed to hold out. So some late fireworks. Not particularly high scoring, not as comfortable as I thought it could be, but a fairly kind of absorbing contest overall.
It's a huge physical battle is what it was. It was man on man, who's going to buckle first? And it wasn't that they buckled first, it was that Munster had obviously picked something up in Machinot's box kicking. They charged him down 2 or 3 times before Conor Murray actually managed to get this one through for the try. And that was it. So obviously good analysis. They've picked up something and it's won them the game in the end. The thing I will say, you know, I'm one for stats. In this game, there were 215 metres made by Munster and 202 made by Racing. When you compare it to the other games this weekend, just for a comparison, Ulster made more than that on their own in a losing cause, and La Rochelle made 500. It was such a tight game. There was no quarter given. That's why there was no metre made. And the big one for me is both teams were 93 and 94% tackle completion, which is outrageous. I think they're 2 of the highest numbers I've seen so far this season. It really was as tight as anything, and they were not letting anything go. And that, like I said, it's the analysis on that charge down is really the only thing that was between the teams.
Yeah, I did hear that it was a focus area for them. And at half time, Razzy Erasmus was drumming it into them, saying, look, we've done it to Machinot already, and we're almost there. Keep targeting him when he's box kicking, because something will come of it. And I think the only thing that, well, doesn't frustrate me, because obviously I was delighted with Munster winning, but if you think it's that easy for an opposing side to pick up that bit of analysis and say, okay, lads, we need to continue targeting this and something's going to happen, why aren't the other side saying, well, we're in danger here, we need to change this because otherwise we're going to stitch ourselves up? Why aren't they saying, actually, we need to either be far quicker with the box kicks, we need to not be taking our time, or even potentially mix it up a little bit with, you know, with substitutions? But it just blows my mind a little bit when it's something that's been picked up by everyone, really, and even during the game by the opposition team. Why aren't Racing picking that up and doing something about it? I just don't really understand that.
Well, you'd think after two or three that they'd just go, right, we'll just pass it to 10. Just play it back to 10, let 10 clear it, or whoever your big kicker is, play it back to them and let him clear it, rather than keep getting charged down, or do what teams seem to do. I know the one that got charged down for the try was from a scrum, so you couldn't do this, but especially at the back of rucks, people form those big long trains and they bind on around the side and they form big barriers so people can't get through. Like you say, you'd imagine that unless their analysts haven't picked it up, they just didn't realise that it was a thing, and they imagine it will be this week in training, they'll be working on it every day, but perhaps they hadn't picked it up before. Now Munster have, no other team will be able to do it, and it was just a wily bit of play by whoever Munster employ in their dark rooms watching all the game tape.
Well, if nothing else, you do expect Munster to be a bit wily. And I think it, particularly a year on from Axel Foley passing away, again, you know, and it's a year on from the same game as well. You know, it was Munster against Racing. They'll be particularly delighted with that win. Right, so let's tuck into another pool. So let's have a go at pool one. So we've got La Rochelle, new favourite team, with a really impressive home win with a bonus point, 41-17 against Ulster, and Wasps bouncing back in pretty spectacular fashion with also 41 points and a bonus point against Quins, who only mustered 10. So should we get stuck into Wasps Quins first? Didn't really have a lot of hope for Wasps given their recent run of form, but they did show some improvement last week, and they seem to have got some key players back into the first 15. Quins, as we know, can be quite inconsistent, and despite having a lot of possession and territory in the first half, they got a bit of a lesson in being clinical again, and by the time the second half came around, they were too far behind. It was too late. Wasps took all of that momentum and made it a bit of a thumping win.
Yeah, exactly as you said. Quins had more possession, more territory, but Wasps' defensive effort was huge. And I think it was led by the fact that they were able to get Youngs and Haskell in the back row together with Hughes. Launchbury's in the second row. They've got Cooper, William, Mullen. That's almost their full team now. They're still missing Tommy Taylor, but Ashley Johnson's not a bad replacement. They're able to have Gaskell and Willis on the bench. And then their backs now look more like the backs that you'd expect. Robson, Gopeth, Daly, Wade, LaRue. You know, that's the sort of side they were going for. And actually, they for once started their summer signing, Jan de Jonge in the centre, who looked pretty decent. He made some decent yards, some good tackles. Now, they've still got a big injury list, but if they can keep the nucleus of this together and start to build some confidence, then yeah, I think they might be back. It was a complete opposite for Quins, who for some reason seemed slightly devoid of ideas. And their back row was made up of the hooker, who doesn't normally play there, Rob Shaw, who, to be fair, didn't have his best game, and Luamanu, who again didn't have his best game. And they're really missing their back row players. Those injuries, I think, are starting to bite for them. And it just didn't quite click for them for some reason. All the ball they had, whenever they got the ball, other than a couple of Marcus Smith flashes of magic where he made a nice break, a couple of nice breaks, I never saw them troubling Wasps. Even at the end of the first half, they had a couple of 5-metre line-outs. They tried to drive over, they tried some pick and go, and then they got bundled into touch. And then Marla got a bit aggy. You could tell he wasn't happy. It wasn't clicking for them, and Wasps fully deserved the win.
Yeah, well, it was no surprise to see Marla at it again. I'm sure some people say it was a little bit of karma when he got sin-binned, because he was pleading with the referee to also card the player from Wasps for provocation. which did give me a little bit of a smile, given the circumstances in the last game these two played at the Rico. But it just seems typical Quins at the moment. Seems you can watch them 1 week and they're just superb, and then the next week they just don't turn up. A bit like Marlon Yard, actually. I don't know if do you see why he got dropped?
Oh, don't. I follow him on social media, and he does sometimes come across as someone that wishes he was a rap star.
Yeah, well, I think this isn't the first timekeeping issue with him turning up late, and the coach has just lost patience with him. And it's just unforgivable, really, that kind of carry on, and fully deserved to be dropped, and he needs to sort himself out. It just seems idiotic, given that he's actually been in pretty good form this season, and of all seasons, to then start playing silly buggers and turning up late and getting dropped. This is the one, you know, he just built up really good bit of momentum, and then he goes and does something stupid like that. So not clever at all.
Yeah, talk about being not clever. What do you think of, because obviously you said Marla got yellow carded. Now he's been cited for that. I thought that was a red card personally, dropping an elbow on someone's head. And also in that game, Hughes has been cited for, did you see his, he tackled Marcus Smith and he sort of straight armed his head as he went through. And that could cost England dearly with Nobili Vunipola in the side. That was Hughes' chance to have another good run in the team. I think they were both very, very stupid.
Yeah, and again, it's just the timing of these things. You know, Vunipola's injured. Hughes is going to get his shot. He then plays probably the best game he's had all season by a mile. And now he can potentially be out of it again. I struggle a little bit with some of these citing decisions because I understand the importance of protecting players. I think some of it is getting a little bit silly. I think people are going a little bit too far with it now, particularly in the Northampton-Claremont game, which obviously we'll touch on later. But I think Hughes could be in trouble. And given the way things are at the moment, I think Marla was lucky to get away with the yellow. That was just Marla. He gets wound up easily. You know, for once he was getting provoked instead the other way around, and he just lost it. And I think when you drop a forearm deliberately with force onto someone's head, you're pretty lucky to get away with only a yellow, actually, given the climate for cards at the moment.
Yeah, and the only other thing I want to say on my on-running commentary, having watched him live for the last 3 weeks, Willie LaRue still not worth the money.
He's getting an absolute slating at the moment, isn't he? But I think this is the game that, given the points that Wasp put on the board and some of the space they had, that even if you were going to criticise him for not being able to grit his teeth and get on with it in some games, you'd expect him to perform. But, you know, Wade got a couple. There were some other, you know, other standout performers, and he just was not among them at all.
No, he was not.
Right, so let's go on to La Rochelle, who once again were hugely impressive. It took a little while to get going, but in the end, it was a superb performance. There were some really good tries. They played with attacking intent yet again. They've got a formidable home record. They didn't lose at all there in the top 14 last season. But they were just brilliant. And Ulster, it seems that there's something a little bit missing with them. I think we probably had higher hopes of them about 3 or 4 weeks ago, looking at some results, but they just don't seem to be quite there at the top level at the moment.
I think they've got some injuries, and obviously the problems they had with their fly halves at the start of the season didn't help, but Leila Fano came in, he scored a good try. And for the start of it, they seemed to be able to contain Cast a bit. They were not La Rochelle a bit. And they were stopping the offloads and just trying to work it out. And it was very tight at halftime. And then all of a sudden, in a space of sort of 50 minutes, from 50 minutes to 65 minutes, just absolutely nuts. And La Rochelle suddenly clicked into gear. And, you know, talk about being in the groove. Some of the tries they scored were fantastic. Victor Vito was pulling balls out of the air like it was an NFL game. You know, Odell Beckham Jr., one-handed, absolutely outrageous. And all of this they did with no number 10 on the field. They lost Ryan Lamb in the ninth minute. They put their winger, Sinzel, on the upper fly half. Didn't miss a beat. Absolutely fantastic. And they play rugby how I would like to watch rugby played every week. It's power running. It's, you know, they can play the, you know, the gritty big boy stuff. But they do it and then they get it wide and they have runners and they all come at different angles and they offload. And like I say, if they can keep that up, people are calling them a dark horse. I don't think there's any dark horse about it. They are right in the mix.
Yeah, I don't agree with this dark horse, no rubbish as well. I think a lot of it is just because they're not a familiar team or a familiar face. If it was the same players that had done last season what they had done, but they were called Toulon instead, there'd be no dark horse about it. You know, unbeaten at home, finished top of the table after the regular season, which in my mind makes you the best team in the league, regardless of playoffs. There is no dark horse about that. And it was just blistering. I think when we mentioned last week that it's a refreshing memory to what I expect from a French team with a powerful forward pack, but then willing to attack from anywhere with the backs and having the ability to do it. But also they, as you say, it wasn't quite clicking for them, but they were more than happy dealing with that, riding through that period, still being in front. And then when it did click, they just ran absolute riot. So really looking forward to seeing them play their next game. Definitely one that I'm going to try and watch.
Yeah, the last point on this game, just they didn't lose at all in the top 14 last year. The one team that went to La Rochelle and won last year, known and renowned for their beautiful away form, Gloucester.
that just sums it up, doesn't it? Like Gloucester, God. You just can't trust them. You just can't trust them at all, any time. And I'm not looking forward to our predictions for them this weekend either. Just forget it. Might flip a coin. Right, so we'll go to pool two. So we've got Saracens with a bonus point win over the Ospreys. It was 36-34. Ospreys do come away with 2 points from that, with a try bonus point and losing bonus point. And Clermont took a bonus point win at home to Northampton, 24-7. And I think we should start there, because there's a lot to say. Well, there is, in my opinion, about that game. Unfortunately, not all of it's about the rugby being played. But it's what I will say before we delve into that is that it was an expected win in my eyes for Clermont. I did expect them to get the bonus point, particularly at home. But they aren't looking like the fluent side that I know them to be. And they haven't really all season. So I don't know if they're a team that are going to come good, but they just weren't quite there. But then you've got Northampton, who, when they're playing well in the league, they seem to be doing pretty well. But they're another side that just don't seem to be able to quite compete with the top level sides, because they've been just destroyed by Sarries twice and pretty comfortably beaten by Clermont.
I actually thought Northampton played very well in this game. They had a try wrongly disallowed that was farcical, but we'll get onto the referee in a minute. They manned up well up front. Other than, you know, the first try was a pushover try from 5 meters. Other than that, they made their tackles quite well. They seemed to keep Clermont at bay, you know, not with ease, but, you know, they were keeping them out. It was difficult for Clermont because of the injuries. You lose your fly half. That was horrible. No way should the French TV have replayed it like 3 times like they did. Just no need. Courtney Laws looked good. Piers Francis, for the first time, I actually saw him do a couple of things, which was quite nice, but I still don't rate him as an international player. And they seemed to be able to sort of stay in the game a bit, Northampton, but then they just let themselves down. They got to within sort of 5 metres of the try line 2 or 3 times, and then they'd knock on or they'd give away a penalty and they just couldn't get it over. And then all of a sudden, just before half time, Clermont score. Straight after half time, their scrum half gathers a ball from a restart and runs length of the field and scores, and that's pretty much game over. So for all the hard work that Northampton put in, and they probably could have had at least one, possibly two tries in that first half, they were then out of it, and it was just about sort of damage limitations, and they couldn't quite pull it off.
Yeah, but then is that again the problem, that there are teams that look, they almost flatter to see if they have the ability to stay in a tight game, they've got good defence, they're not letting the game run away with it. But then when it comes down to it, they're not actually able to capitalise on their chances and they end up losing by 20 points.
Yeah, I think that again could be down... I don't want to bag on him anymore, but it could be down to Francis, who just didn't seem to quite he just didn't seem to make the right calls at the right times when they were near the line. There just seemed to be a lack of communication, which is what you want your 10 to be doing. And they were trying to pick and go too much when perhaps they should have been going wide. And then when they went wide, he seemed to eat up space by drifting. His first few steps seemed to be sideways instead of forwards, and he sort of ate into the ground. And then they would almost get bundled into touch. And it just didn't, like you say, it just didn't quite click for them, and that could well be their problem. But given that we bagged on them so much at the start of the season and no one really expected them to do anything this season, they are perhaps exceeding our expectations slightly anyway. So a development year for Northampton. Take your lessons, take what you can, and then next season come back stronger.
Well, this is it. Actually, it's their own fault. You're right. They were so bad. It's their own fault for changing our opinions on them and then disappointing us again. So I think they've only got themselves to blame. But I think, yeah, Laws is just, he's just such a good player. It's the second week in a row where he comes out of a game with huge credit in a losing cause. I just think you could probably put him in a bin bag and in ice skates and give him 14 badges as teammates, and he'd probably still do a pretty good job of putting a shift in. But anyway, before I go off on a bit of a tangent.
Do you want to talk about the referee?
Yes, I do. And this is how bad he was. I don't know which decision to start with. I think because I mentioned it earlier, let's have a quick chat about the Hartley yellow card and the Slimani yellow card. Now, in my opinion, the Hartley yellow card is exactly my issue with people going too far with protecting heads. Now, Hartley has gone in to clear out a ruck. I don't think he's gone in swinging. He's trying to tackle the man. He's got his arms low because he's going for ankles. His hand then seems to just brush and clip Slimani in the face, who I don't think he can even see when he's coming in. And ref looks at it, doesn't use any common sense and gives him a yellow. And then Slimani decides, I didn't appreciate that because I'm not very intelligent. So I'm going to seek retribution and go for a deliberate swinging arm to the head. And I think he should have been sent off. And he wasn't. He was just given a yellow.
I agree with everything you said. Like you say, Hartley was clearly trying to clear someone out. If Hartley doesn't get to put his arms out like that, then he's clearing out with no arms, which is a penalty. So he has to make an effort to wrap his arms. Samani's sitting on the floor because he's just made the tackle or whatever and gets an accidental hit to the face. The ref doesn't look at it to start with. Samani rolls around on the floor. The fans boo. Typical French fans. Gets it looked at. But then you look at earlier in this season, Blair Cowan was sent off. And I think we talked about an Edinburgh player was sent off for going into rucks with their arms tucked in, going elbow and shoulder to the head. Red cards. It wasn't even, you know, and we said Blair Cowan's an idiot. That Edinburgh player's an idiot. Good on referees for looking at this. Slimani does it. He goes up to the TMO. And the TMO goes, oh, it was sort of with the bottom of the neck. What?
the TMO wasn't much better than the ref, was he, actually? Oh, Christ. So that was complete nonsense from the referee. What we've also got is Para being knocked out, going off for an HIA and coming back on, when the replays make it look like he's gone unconscious. The referee is saying he went unconscious, all of which means there's no HIA, there's no coming back on, you're out the game because you need to be protected. And he's got players pointing this out to him, and he's just ignoring it. And there's been just a ridiculous statement coming out today from European Rugby saying that the referee's comments may have confused people, but it was the right decision. Well, no, is basically what I think.
And I agree. I mean, the referee was completely out of his depth. And when you look at the fact that he was trending on Twitter, I mean, this is a Saturday at, what was it, 5 o'clock, 3 o'clock? So this is when peak football time throughout England and Scotland and Wales, and a referee in a rugby game is trending. You know he must be bad, right? You know he's got to be doing something wrong. And he just seemed...
That's impressive. That is really impressive.
He seemed completely out of his depth. And the disallowed try shouldn't be disallowed. They knocked it back out of the scrum half's hands. Perfectly fine. He shouldn't have allowed Parra back on. He completely messed up Hartley's sin binning and Slimani's sin binning. And then he didn't even know that with Hartley in the sin bin, and then the Haywood completely split open on his face with blood pouring down him, he went, have you got another hooker to bring on, lads? Well, no, because we're only allowed two. Come, I mean, it was ridiculous.
And that's just without, I think, the general poor refereeing presence he had in the game, because he just had no authority over the players. And by the end of it, there were just constant niggle and scuffles breaking out all over the place. And he just had no control over the game. And I think that's quite damning on its own without the blatant, just shocking mistakes he's made and misinterpretations of the law. It was awful. I just think that probably all the good refereeing potions were drank by Nigel Owens in Wales and he missed out.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, he just, and the thing is, he's 27. I don't know why they're trying to fast track him through. It was like his, I think he said it was third or fourth European game. I understand you need to get new referees in, young referees, etc., but he's 27. Let him do a few more Pro 14 games. Perhaps let him do a Welsh derby. Let him do a Pro 14 semi-final. It seemed a bit big for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with putting 27-year-olds in, but don't be fast-tracking him or rushing him if they're not ready. Who's the English ref who looks about 12? Do you know the one I mean?
I do know who you mean, but I can't remember his name.
Every time I see him, I'm really impressed. He's incredibly clear. He doesn't take any nonsense from any of the players. He explains his decisions. He gets them correct almost all the time. And players don't chat back to him. And he just has that presence and authority that was everything not on display by Mr. Whitehouse refereeing this game.
Seconded.
Right. So we'll leave that one and go to Saracens Ospreys. We both predicted a Saracens bonus point win. But the way this panned out against what has been, quite frankly, dire Ospreys side this season, I couldn't quite believe my eyes when I was checking score updates, because Ospreys, you know, they took the lead, they were coming back into it, and they've ended up getting two bonus points and only losing by two away at Allianz Park, where Saracens haven't lost for about 3 years in Europe. It was not at all what I was expecting. And then, and that's even if I thought Tipperich and Lydiot were starting, two of their key players, and they both failed late fitness tests. So I don't think I've got any explanation for how this happened.
Well, no, and Webb didn't play either because he got a virus. But I would say, surprise. The guy that came in, Sam Cross, came in for Tipperick and Idiot. He was absolutely fantastic on the flank for Ospreys. And it was the most un-Saracens performance. When you think that last week, I think they made one handling error all game. They were making handling errors left, right and centre. They didn't quite seem to be clicking. Short pullback pop passes were being dropped. Passes weren't sympathetic. They couldn't quite make their line out work fully. It was the most un-Saracens-like performance. And yet, every time that the Ospreys sort of got into it, you could see Saracens going, oh, this isn't going very well. Hang on a minute. And they'd kick into gear and they'd pull themselves ahead. And then the Ospreys would rally. Saracens would take the foot off the gas. But it's one of those things that people always say, champion teams win when they don't play very well. And that is possibly the worst I've seen Saracens play in 2 or 3 years, considering it was the best I'd seen them play possibly last week. But they still got all 5 points that they wanted. So it's got to be a bit disheartening for Ospreys, who put in a great game. Evans at fullback looks a great player. He didn't make the Welsh training squad somehow, which baffles belief. And like I say, Sam Cross looked very good. Their pack were monumental in defence. They were stopping Saracens getting over the gain line every time. Really, really putting in big hits and a big shift. And they put all that effort in, and they still lost. So it's just that well-oiled Saracen machine, even when it creaks a little bit, still somehow rumbles over the line.
I think they're developing a Northampton hangover, because I'm pretty sure after they demolished Northampton in the Premiership, they were uncharacteristically sloppy with loads of handling errors the very next game, and we were picking up on that. So Northampton may crumble against them, but they may be causing some horrible after effects. So I'm going to watch out for that the next time Sarries hammer Northampton to see how badly they perform in the game afterwards. Right, let's dip into pool five, isn't it? It's our last pool. So we've already kind of briefly discussed the Benetton Treviso too long game. Not really sure there's much more to add, really. It was really close, very impressive from Benetton. They put themselves in a position to win with a penalty with only a minute left, and then made a balls up of the restart, and Toulon got a scrum penalty and knocked it over and won. But it's hugely impressive performance from Benetton, especially, you know, comparatively to what they've been able to do before. And I think even at the final whistle, you saw a couple of the Toulon players just puffing their cheeks out, just huge relief.
Yeah, they will. It's one of those a bit like Saracens, where they didn't play very well. They know they didn't play very well, and they'll take it and they'll go back to the south of France and think, thank God we're not going to have to play in that rain in Italy anymore. And Benetton will sit there and think, why? You know, why couldn't we just gather a restart? We'd have done 100 of them in training. We'll have gathered it, set it up, a couple of drives, kick the ball off. We win. Fantastic day. Let's all get on the red wine. Just didn't happen. The try Breck scored for them was fantastic. Forwards and backs moving together. And like I said, they look like they're putting a good game plan together. But they just need, perhaps they need that one win where the little bit of luck goes their way. When the restart gets dropped, it gets dropped backwards and they fall on it. And then they'll get that belief again. And as for Toulon, I don't think anyone's going to be scared of them this year. I don't think that currently, I wouldn't think any of you big boys, you Leinsters, Sarries, La Rochelles, I don't think anyone's going to be too worried about drawing Toulon in the quarters if they get through.
How many Leinsters and La Rochelles, Andy?
Loads, mate. Loads.
One, Andy. One.
Yeah, but I'm pluralising it as a whole, as in they're all together. Leinsters, Munsters, they're all a whole together.
Loving it. Right. But yeah, I think that aura of Toulon is gone. Don't think anyone is remotely scared about them, and they haven't really put any performances to make me change my opinion. I just hope that Benetton can actually nick a win, because I think a European win for them would be huge. Right, so Scarlets, Bath, again, a game we've touched on briefly. Bath win. Scarlets get a losing bonus point, which isn't really any good to them because they've lost their first two games. Even by Welsh standards, it was horrific weather. And I suppose a bit of an irony, really, that it was Priestland who controlled the game for Bath, kicked his penalties off the back of a really strong forwards display. Bath kept it simple. They said strong forwards, they played their territory, they kicked their kicks, and the weather just wasn't at all conducive to the way Scarlets play, and they suffered.
Yeah, there was a lot of grubber kicks going through, people sliding on them. Priestland, like you say, put the ball in. I mean, the stats for me in this one are that Bath won all their line out, they won all their scrum, and they only gave away 5 penalties. And that's how you win in the wet. You make sure that the other team can't kick to the corner, so you don't give away too many penalties. You win all of your own ball, and then you get your fly half and your scrum half to pin them back. And that is exactly what they did. They had more of the territory. They were trying to force Scarlets to play from deep, which Scarlets loved doing, but just was not the atmosphere for it. And they pulled it off. I mean, Priestland almost scored a great try as well. And you just think Scarlets will be thinking, oh, one of those moves we had could have gone through. Perhaps we could have done it. But it just wasn't the day. It just wasn't their day. And I don't think they're completely out of it. There's a possibility if they can show Benetton up, which looks trickier and trickier every time, they might get one of the best loser spots. But I'm not confident at the moment. And yeah, Bath, making your prediction for them winning the group looking more like a sensible decision every day.
Well, I do try my best, Andy. I get plenty wrong, but every now and then I get a gem. Right, so that wraps up our recap of the Champions Cup. And before we start getting involved in our tries of the week and hits of the week, I think we should have a quick chat about Australia New Zealand, because I wasn't really that bothered about this game. I just thought it's going to be another New Zealand win. It's what happens. But it was a big performance from Australia, and Folau in particular was superb, and they beat New Zealand 23-18 for their first win over them in a couple of years.
And they fully deserved it. New Zealand weren't quite at the races, but Australia were very sharp. Their forwards put in a monumental shift, and then they have got the classy backs who can do something with the ball, and they managed to get them enough ball to do it. Like I say, Folau was excellent. Every time I watch Kirtley Beale, I wonder how much it would have cost Wasps to let him, to sort of keep him. Foley had a good game, and they've got a couple of new young forwards coming through who look really, really good. Dempsey, who got man of the match on the back row playing with Hooper. McMahon, their number 8, is an absolute bull of a man, who's just running people over, and they just managed to hold New Zealand. Now, it's not necessarily the full New Zealand team. You know, there's no Bowden Barrett there, there's no Brodie Retallick.
Kano,
Ben Smith, yeah. Dag. So, you know, put the pinch on. I did see a thing that someone put up a picture of the Australian team, and it was like, we don't often beat New Zealand, but when we do, there's nothing riding on it. And that's really harsh.
It is a bit harsh, because it was a win that I think they needed. They needed to finally beat New Zealand, and yeah, Beale is astonishing. Do you know how many caps he's got, though? Because is he under 60 caps, and that's why he went back, because he wanted to play internationals? I don't know if that's the reason why he went back.
I don't know.
But it wouldn't surprise me. I think, yeah, McMahon, I didn't really know as a player, but he had an absolute barnstormer. Huge game line impact, which is more important against the Kiwis than anyone. And I know that we've run through a list of names that New Zealand were missing, and they are some pretty huge names. But still, it's impressive, because how many times do we see New Zealand missing 4, 5, 6, 7 players and everyone thinks, oh, that's going to hurt them. And then actually it doesn't make a blind bit of difference because they have cover everywhere and they just pluck more players out of seemingly nowhere, shove them in the side, and they're then the same old All Blacks. So I know it does look like they're missing loads of key players, but I still think we shouldn't take anything away from Australia because they did play well. And there has been a clear progression for them over the three Bledisloe Cup matches of getting better and better and better. And yeah, I think Australian rugby as a whole needed that win.
It did indeed. And I think they've got a nice new set of younger players coming in now. And it's gone from thinking as a Northern Hemisphere fan that other than playing New Zealand in autumn, you know, if you had South Africa and Australia, you know, when we were looking at it, say in June, you're thinking, oh, actually, you know, we could win these games. They'll be all right. You know, we might get all the wins. We've not got New Zealand. You're now thinking, oh, South Africa have got a bit of form again. And Australia have found some more players from somewhere. And actually, it's going to be very, very tough autumn fixtures for everybody.
It is. Right, let's wrap that up and get our tries of the week in. So I will hand over to you, Andy. And I know that there was plenty of choice. We were spoiled this week. But what have you plucked out for your try of the week?
Normally I go for a sort of flowing team move. I like an offload and you know, play from the back, which could have been any of three that Leicester scored, Glasgow scored a nice try. There's a couple from La Rochelle. But then I've just gone for absolute outrageous talent and just unbelievable specimen of a man. I just can't get over Nadolo's finish for Montpellier. He had three men on him at one point trying to tackle him, and he somehow kept himself in the air, sort of semi-forward, backward rolling, and stuck out that big paw. Ball looks like a cricket ball in his hand, and plopped it down on the line before he hit touch. Just the skill and individual nature of that try, just unbelievable.
I loved it as well, because whenever we look at Nadolo, he is a beast of a man, and you do see often multiple defenders trying to bring him down to no avail. But that's the kind of try we associate with him. But to have the skill and the athleticism to finish like that isn't necessarily something you would expect from him. And it was wonderful to watch. I am going to go for a team try. And I'm going to give it to Steph Evans from Scarlets, because I think it was even more impressive given the state of the weather that they didn't have much opportunity to run the ball. It wasn't a very good day for them overall, but this was, given the conditions, even better than normal. Just a wonderful move, started deep in their own half, putting it through the hands, some lovely cheeky passes, you know, a few kind of basketball touches down there, and then just great interplay between the scrum half, who I can't remember his name.
Gareth Davis,
yeah. And then Steph Evans to finish it off. And I would also like just to add on to that, I wish people would stop banging on about George North being injured and it being a blow to Wales, because quite frankly, he's been bang average for about 3 years now. And the way Steph Evans has been playing, get him on the pitch, because if you want someone to be a threat, that's your man, not George North. Anyway, hit of the week. What have you got for me, Andy?
Well, I know we've had a discussion on this, and I'm going to let you do the biggest tackle I saw all weekend. And I'm going to go slightly, there was two things I saw. One is any run by Ellis Genge. He put in some massive, massive hits with his shoulders, just carrying people. But in terms of hitting a ball, I don't think I've ever seen a sweeter strike. Stuart Hogg caught a ball about 5 metres from his own try line and then cleared it, and it went dead at the other end of the field. Now, now I know they've got a plastic pitch, right? So it bounces a little bit, but that was ridiculous. 90 metres. And it was still rolling. It was the sweetest connection I think I've seen on a rugby board. I know he got a bit excited and he didn't perhaps mean to hit it hard, but it was so sweet and it travelled. That is the best hit of a ball I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, no matter how sweetly you hit it, you would not expect that to be going dead, would you? You think you're completely within your rights to hit that ball as hard as you can when you're that close to your own try line.
It took a couple of steps. It's been 10 metres from his own line and he went dead.
Yeah, you'd still be quite pleased with it. Even though it wouldn't get you anywhere, you'd still be quite pleased. But yeah, I think our joint in the bin hit of the week is Tuonga Fassi for New Zealand, with just an outrageously strong, brutal hit on Bernard Foley in the Australia-New Zealand game. And there's times when you look at that and I'm surprised Foley's still alive, because it was just right in his ribs. And, you know, Christ, well, what more do you say about it? It was one of the most brutal hits I can remember seeing. But, you know, completely legal, all fair, but just perfect timing and brute strength.
And Foley got up. He played on. That was, like you say, just amazing.
Incredible. Right. Bin Juice, I know we always like a good moan. So I will give you the honours, Andy, of going first. What have you got for this week's Bin Juice?
Well, we've pretty much covered it. I didn't have too much other than I was going to moan about sighting commissioners, because I don't understand how Dylan Hartley's been cited and Slimani hasn't been cited. But I sort of already covered that rant. But he's gone with his shoulder into his head and they've seen it. And nothing's happened. Slimani's got off scot-free, and yet Hartley, who's not looking at anybody, gets cited. This is watching a replay. I thought the whole point of citing commissioners and replays was to cut out bad decisions. You know, like in cricket, now you've got you can do your reviews, so that if someone clearly nicks it and the umpire's missed it, you go, well, let's have a look. Oh, well, he's nicked it, you're out, after Stuart Broad managed to stand his ground after nicking it to second slip. But it's not. It didn't happen. They've seen the replay. They've seen him elbow him in the head and they've just gone, oh, it's all right, mate. Don't worry about it. So, again, my rant every week seems to be referee-based, but I just can't believe when I read that today that he's not been cited.
Yeah, it does seem very unfair, and that it's Hartley's reputation going before him that he's been cited, because I don't even think that was a yellow and Slimani should have been gone off the pitch, straight red. Mine have probably been covered as well, because I am getting sick to death. It focuses around the Hartley yellow card, of this accidental touching of the head when there's absolutely no intent. There's not a huge amount of force. It's completely accidental. To start sin-binning people for that and then citing them, I think, is absurd. And you don't often see it in sport, but I still wish we would just see some common sense. Because it is doing my nut in. You just think this isn't a difficult decision to interpret that. Just use your brain and make a sensible decision. The only other thing that really irritated me was the booing in the Glasgow Leinster game. Now, this is UK and Irish teams playing. We're not French. Don't lower yourself to their level. There are going to be decisions you might not like. But to start booing a player specifically and then booing and whistling when he's trying to take a kick, don't bring it in. I don't like it. It's unnecessary. And you just make yourself look French, which I don't think is a good look.
Just going back to your point on the common sense, I wonder if bringing in, like, you know, they do in Formula One where you have ex-drivers watching the race and they help with the stewards. Perhaps having an ex-player sitting in with the TMO or on the sighting commission would actually help get rid of some of that, because they can go, No, that's fine. Common sense.
Cue a fight in the TMO box and an argument. I know what you're saying, and I think it definitely would be something that could potentially help, but yeah, still a long way to go, and I'm sure they would still find new and bizarre ways of making bad decisions. I have no doubt in that whatsoever. Right, let's go for our predictions next week. Because there's not a lot to say about last week's predictions, because when I looked at the list, it turns out that I hadn't realised, but we'd basically predicted identical results for everything, apart from Glasgow Leinster, which you got right and I got wrong.
So what was that? Who got it right?
And I don't like saying that. I think my mic's gone. So we'll move on to next week's predictions. And we're back to home comforts, domestic league games in the Premiership and the Pro 14. And I think there are some horrible games to call. There are a few terrors in here, Andy. I'm going to warn you. So first up, we'll go with Sale, brilliant at home, against Exeter, just brilliant.
Sale are good at home, and they've put in a couple of good performances against strong French sides in the Euro Challenge Cup. But I'm not back in against Exeter, so I'm going to go for an Exeter win, and Exeter tend to pick up bonus points. So I'm going for an Exeter bonus point win.
I agree. I think extra bonus point. Sale are very good at home. I think they may well score a couple of tries. But after, Exeter must be just high on life. And it would be a great team and few days training to be around that squad after what they've been doing the last couple of weeks. And I think they're going to carry on that good feeling and get a bonus point win as well. So we have the Mercurial Quins at home at the Stoop against Worcester.
Quins win at home, and they normally win at home well, and I think they will be smarting after what happened last week. So I'm going to go with a Quins bonus point win.
I also agree. One that's maybe a little bit trickier, we've got Saints at home to Wasps, who have come back in with a decent performance.
Well, that's it. 2 weeks ago, I'd have said Saints would win this. But that performance by Wasps has just made me wonder. Saints have had an extra day to recover, but Wasps were at home. I thought Saints actually played very well, and I think they might have a sting of sort of grievance with the way that the referee refereed that game, and they might be trying to get some frustrations out. So I'm going to go for a Saints win.
See, I'm really tempted to pick Wasps, but I'm not convinced what's going to happen with Nathan Hughes, and I think that's going to be a struggle if he's not available. So I'm going to also go with a Saints win. Saints win. I think they might do it without a losing bonus point as well. Right, I don't know if we need to dwell on this next one for too long, Andy, but it's Sarries at home to Irish.
I'd already written you down for a Sarries bonus point. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine, mate. Sign me up. And then I think these next two games are probably the toughest calls. So we've got Bath at home to Gloucester. Bath, you would maybe think would win, but it's a derby game. Gloucester are going to get fired up. They've had it a little bit easier over the last week. Do you think they can do it, or do you think they will be their usual poor side on their travels?
I think as it's a derby game, I don't think there'll be lots of tries in it, but I think Bath tend to beat Gloucester at the Rec. I think their record at the Rec's quite poor, but I think Gloucester have improved. So I'm going to go Bath win, Gloucester losing bonus point.
I'm going to end up with the same predictions again, Andy. I'm going to just go Bath, no losing bonus point for Gloucester. And that leaves us with, I think, probably the most exciting game of the weekend, Newcastle at home to Leicester.
I'm very much looking forward to this game. Newcastle have put in some big shifts in the Challenge Cup, especially going away to France this weekend and winning. Leicester looked so good, but I wonder if they'll miss Tomua and Genge this week. And that Falcons side looked very good at home. I really would like, as you know, as a perhaps Tigers homer, I'd love to pick Tigers for this. But I'm going to stick with what my head says and go for a Falcons win.
Me too. I'm also going bonus point for Newcastle. What are you leaving them without one? Are you
I think it will be really, really tight. So I'm going to give the Tigers a losing bonus point. I think it's going to be a very tight game, especially with the weather coming in the northeast. I think it will be a bit scrappy. Not perhaps as fluent as Newcastle have been, but I just back them in their pack to do enough to get the win.
Okay, right. Off to the Pro 14, and we've got Connacht at home to Munster.
Munster win. Again, I think the weather might play a part in the west of Ireland, so I'm going no bonus point.
Yeah, me too. Probably, again, not a game we need to discuss much, but Glasgow at home to Southern Kings.
Glasgow bonus point.
Absolutely. Ospreys at home to Dragons.
I liked what I saw at the Ospreys. If they can repeat that performance, especially at home, I know the Dragons are improved, but I can't see them living with the Ospreys. I've got an Ospreys bonus point win.
I also have Ospreys bonus point. Do we have any different games yet? Are we all the same? I think we're all the same so far. This has got to change. Benetton Treviso at home to Edinburgh.
I don't think it's going to change now. Edinburgh in complete disarray. Their two players have been, one's done for cocaine, one's done for being out when he shouldn't. And Benetton looking good form, so I'm going to Benetton win.
Yeah, me too. I also think they're going to get bonus point. I'm just going to go wild with the Italian side. I'm going to go Treviso bonus point. Zebre against the Cheetahs.
I think this is a tough call because Zebre have played well in Europe the past couple of weeks, and they're not too bad at home. And I know the Cheetahs have been very good, but they've had 2 weeks off and they're not in South Africa anymore. So I'm torn. I really, really want to give it to Zebre, but I'm going to give the Cheetahs the win.
Okay, well, we've got a different one finally because I'm going to go with Zebre to do it. I think, yeah, a bit of a break. Cheetahs have looked very good, but they've mainly looked really good at home. And I think that there's a real wave of positivity in Italian rugby at the moment. And as you say, Zebre have been actually doing quite well in the last couple of weeks in the Challenge Cup as well. So I'm going to go with Zebre to win that one. Ulster at home to Leinster.
Now, again, this could be a big Welsh derby, Irish derby. Derbies are always tight games. I just wonder if Leinster might rest a couple of players, if they've had any orders from the IRFU about playing some of their Irish internationals too much. I always like to pick Ulster at home, even though I'm very high on Leinster at the moment. But I'm going to go against my head and go with my gut. I'm going to go for an Ulster win.
Okay. I said I'd make an apology to my father-in-law for predicting Glasgow to beat Leinster. So, sorry, Kieran. But to get back in his good books, because that's always good with the in-laws, I'm going to go with a Leinster win this week. I think they probably will rest some players, but their squad is so good, I don't really think it matters. And I think Ulster have been stuttering a bit in recent weeks. And I think Leinster can change their entire back row and it will still be brilliant and it will outperform Ulster. And I fancy Leinster to make several changes and still go there and win. And then we've got Scarlets at home to Blues, which shouldn't be too difficult either.
It shouldn't, but I wonder if Scarlets will be smarting from last week and whether they can pick themselves up. And the Blues have had some very good results in Europe in the past couple of weeks. However, said all of that, I think Scarlets will win and I think they might run in some tries if the weather holds. So I'm going for a Scarlets bonus point.
Me too. Right, that wraps up today's pod. So thank you very much, Andy. Thank you very much to all of our listeners. And make sure you check us out on Facebook and on Twitter at In The Bin Rugby. And make sure you also check out lastwordonrugby.com with lots of really good articles, none of which are as good as our podcast, but they are all still really good. And we will catch you next week. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.